Welcome to the Field and Garden Podcast. I'm Jessie from the Gardener's Workshop. Today I have for you an interview that Lisa did recently over on the Joe Gardener Show podcast. She joined host Joe Lample to discuss the cool flowers concept and how she got started growing this fantastic group of spring stunners. They covered topics such as how to determine which cool flowers you can grow in your region, when and how to start your cool flowers from seed, as well as the special care requirements of flowers planted in the fall and very early spring. So here it is. I hope you enjoy.
Hi, everybody. This is Joe Lample, the Joe behind Joe Gardener, and welcome to the Joe Gardener Show. One of our most popular episodes of all time was one we did less than a year ago on creating a cutting garden to complement your vegetable garden and all the reasons why that made so much sense. Our guest for that episode was Lisa Mason Ziegler from the Gardener's Workshop. It was packed with practical information, and you and I loved it. So today we're back with Lisa, and thanks to her suggestion, we're talking about a topic that makes so much sense: annual flowers that can be planted in fall to overwinter, or planting in very early spring. It's literally a brilliant time to get a huge head start on next year's flower garden, well ahead of the madness of that very busy time of the year. And the best part, flowers planted so much earlier are so much better in every way. And now is the perfect time to talk about this super efficient technique. She's been honing her skills at this and refining her list of about 33 flower species that she's able to do this with from her Virginia flower farm. And you can too, with some of many of these same flowers, even down to zone 5 in several cases. I, for one, am so excited for this conversation and information today, because as many of us are endeavoring to grow more flowers in our gardens, whether it's as a cut flower garden or for adding diversity to our vegetable garden, or in all cases, to increase biodiversity and attract more pollinators and beneficial insects, you can't go wrong with adding flowers to your garden. Lisa is a wealth of down-to-earth, practical, and reliable information with decades of experience as a flower farmer in zone 7B or 8A, as it has evolved to. And she's learned what works and what doesn't through years of trial and error. And as you'll hear, she has it figured out, and she's sharing her experience and knowledge with us today. And if that weren't enough, we have a free download for you today that Lisa has prepared. It's a planting guide on what and when to plant your cool flowers based on your hardiness zone for these 33 species of flowers. So this is a really handy resource you definitely want to get. And we'll have the links in the show notes for this episode. But in case you want to jump over and grab that free download resource right now, it's waiting for you at joegardener.com/coolflowers. And cool flowers is one word. So joegardener.com/coolflowers. And just in case you aren't familiar with Lisa Mason Ziegler, allow me to acquaint you with her. Lisa is truly a boots-on-the-ground flower farmer, gardener, educator, and founder of thegardenersworkshop.com, author of several books, including Vegetables Love Flowers and Cool Flowers, which is what we'll talk about today. Suffice it to say, if you want to learn how to grow more flowers successfully, Lisa is your go-to source. All the links you need, including to be able to re-listen to this episode again or read the detailed show notes, see the pictures from Lisa's farm, the relevant links to learn more about her, and connect with us in all the various ways, can be found in the show notes for today's episode. And you can find that on our website at joegardener.com. Look for the podcast tab, and this is podcast episode number 274. And of course, we'll have the link to her free download resource on cool flowers and when to plant what to get the best flower garden you've ever had. That's there too. So let's get into my information-packed conversation with Lisa today. Lisa, welcome back. It's always a pleasure to talk to you and to follow all that you're up to all the time. And you are quite the flower farmer and grower and teacher and online entrepreneur. You've got a lot going on.
Thank you, Joe. It's always a pleasure to chat with you.
Thank you. So today, Lisa, one of the things I really want to hone in on is cool season annuals. And, you know, I think oftentimes I relate it a little bit to vegetable gardening in that one of the most missed opportunities there is for people that grow their own food is to grow that fall garden, that cool season garden. And I think in many of our minds, we think that when the summer's over, vegetable gardening season is over. But that couldn't be anything further from the truth. I don't know if you relate to what I said to what we're about to talk about today, but when I think about cool season annuals, that's sort of what I'm thinking about is what a missed opportunity.
Yeah, I mean, you said it really, really well. And flowers, the group that we're going to talk about today, even befuddles people even more, because many of them, for many of us, depending on, you know, it's all about where you live, right? I mean, we have different timing for different regions. And a lot of these flowers, we can, in fact, many of us can plant in the fall to winter over as a baby plant to be the earliest and the most abundant and easy care early spring to early summer garden. And it is a frightening experience to think about planting a little plant outside just when winter's around the corner and on its way, right?
Yeah.
So I think people are afraid. You know, I've been talking, I actually launched my flower farming career back in 1998 on this group of flowers. I had just read a book that pumped me up, and it was August. What do you do in August? So she had mentioned just one or two cool season type flowers, and I thought, well, I'm going to plant them. And that started this whole journey for me. And I will tell you that it was out of the gate such an amazing, easy, because y'all have to understand, I was barely a gardener, much less a farmer when I started, that I had such great success with little input from me just because I timed it properly. And so I understand why people miss the opportunity, but I have spent, so the book was published in 2014, and it's finally catching hold in the masses because people are afraid.
Yeah. Tell us that story though, a little more about that story. Everybody loves a good story, especially me, and you're a good storyteller. That sounds very enticing to hear a little bit more about that. You're brand new. You're, you know, like you said, you're barely a gardener, let alone a farmer, and you're diving into this at a time when people are like, wrapping up for this season in their minds or physically, you're just getting started.
Sure. So I am, you know, I had just recently gotten married, and, you know, the rumor has it around here is that I married him for his gardening dowry, but that was just the bonus, right? So I kind of, I came into this big garden space. And so I read this book, The Flower Farmer by Lynn Baczynski, which is the book that started the masses of most of the cut flower industry. Mm. She planted the seed in us. Mm. And anyway, she mentioned in there that there were a few flowers, like I think it was snapdragons and sweet peas and sweet William, that she mentioned many of us can plant these in the fall. So after I read the book, and you know how it is when you're new to something and you're so excited. So I thought, you know what, that's what I'm going to do. And I was also a new seed starter at that point in time. And at the same time, I had discovered Elliott Coleman and soil blocking.
Yeah.
So I thought, all right, I'm going to get snapdragons, sweet peas, and sweet William seeds. And I did it with soil blocking. And I literally was an overnight success seed starter, which had been a struggle. And then I planted them in the fall. And let me tell you something, the greatest part of fall planting this group of flowers is it changes winter for you. You no longer sit in your house and don't even look out the window anymore. You're in there. And the first thing you think of when you get up in the morning is, I wonder if they're still alive.
Oh.
I wonder if they're still out there. You are peeking out the windows. You're putting on your coat and going out there when you otherwise wouldn't to look at your frozen little plants. So that there's really a whole story about the whole winter thing. You know, the scariest thing a flower farmer can do in the middle of winter is to peek under the row covers. You know, row covers are not required, but they enhance and help you in different ways. Anyway, so I planted sweet peas, sweet William, and snapdragons. And that following spring, I had such an incredible garden with, I mean, me knowing nothing. And that lit me on fire, you know? And anyway, and so I went on a trial to find more flowers like them.
Yeah. And you're out in, you're east of Williamsburg, Virginia, a little bit?
Yeah, I'm in southeastern Virginia. Yeah. I'm dead between Williamsburg and Virginia Beach.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm right on the line of 8A and 7B.
Huh.
When I started, I was definitely 7B, and, you know, it used to stay cold all winter. Now it's a little bit different, but yeah.
We're going to talk a lot about the techniques that you're doing, but when you first started, you already said you planted into soil blocks, and this is for fall planting.
That was the method of seed starting that I, in fact, still use today, but that was the method that I was using. And I started those seeds in soil blocks and then planted the transplants out when they were, you know, 3 to 4 to 5 weeks old, depending on the flower. And it was hit the ground running and success all around.
Wow. Now we're going to talk about the timing of how you sow and when you sow and the method, are you still using soil blocks to plant your fall flowers? Are you direct sowing now? Because there's some that you recommend you direct sow with cover, some without.
So that's a great question. So I do what the seed prefers. Hmm. And that's a step that a lot of people skip.
Yeah.
Some people say, oh, well, I'm just going to direct sow everything. Well, you can do that, but you probably won't have a lot of success with many of them.
Mm-hmm.
So there are specific, I only direct sow in the fall. I don't do any direct sowing in spring and summer because of weed and heat pressure.
Yeah.
And so there are some seeds that I direct sow in the fall, you know, the most beloved and most coveted flower in this group is Bells of Ireland.
Yeah.
Everybody wants to grow it and it escapes everyone. That's a direct sower. So there's a handful that I direct sow, mm-hmm. but there are a lot more that I plant from transplants and soil blocks.
In the fall too?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
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 Interesting.
Yep.
And that, remind me, do you have a greenhouse or how do you
nope.
do all? Yeah.
Nope. I'm in the middle of the city, 100% surrounded by 200,000 residents and no greenhouses allowed.
So you're like me. You've got like a super crowded mm-hmm. seed starting room in that time of year.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Are you, have you got seed started yet for fall?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, we seed start. We don't seed start in the month of December just because we take it off,
yeah.
but we can seed start year round
yeah.
here. I mean, unless you're in the north, you pretty much can, right?
Right.
With succession planting.
Yep. So we're going to talk about a few important dates, first of all, because we want to make cool season flower growing accessible for everyone. But there are some things to know about it, such as dates and hardiness zone and things like that. So get us started. Walk us through the steps that we need to know.
Sure. So there's two important pieces of information. And once you get yours, you can figure out when and what you can plant all the time. So number one is your winter hardiness zone. And so, you know, you can put that in a search engine and find out. If you don't know, put your zip code in, right?
Right.
And find out what your winter hardiness zone is. And so then the next piece of information is to know your first and last expected historic frost dates. I say historic because people say, well, it changes every year now with all the problems, you know, we're facing. I understand that, but you have to have a jumping off point. And if you ask a search engine that very question, your frost dates, it's going to come up with a range that's based on the past 10 years, I would guess.
Mm-hmm.
And that gives you a plant when you're going to plant. Your winter hardiness zone tells you what you can plant in the fall. So let's just say I'm zone 7, just to say simply. If I'm zone 7, then you look at the flowers that we're looking at. And on our website and in my book, I list what we know those flowers are winter hardy to, what zone.
Mm-hmm.
And when you look at that list, if you know your winter hardiness zone, every flower that is hardy in your winter hardiness zone should and can be fall planted because it will survive winter in your area.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's not winter hardy in your zone, that just means that you're going to plant it in very early spring. And we'll talk about the timing. What is very early spring? I would guess here in just a moment. But having your frost dates, knowing your winter hardiness zone, and then knowing what the plant's winter hardiness zone is, just paints the picture. Of what you can plant and when.
And you are a big believer in planting as much as you can in the fall because of the benefits that you get from that, right?
Oh my goodness, Joe, there is no comparison. So I was just on a conversation for a podcast in-house for us, and our seed manager, who is an avid gardener, and she is one of your biggest fans, by the way.
Oh.
And she and I were doing this podcast, and she shared that she saw exactly what I experienced because she had fall planted snapdragons, but the deer had taken out half of them. So she then, in very early spring, replanted snaps within that fall planting to kind of, you know,
yes.
poof it up. She said the performance and the difference of abundance, stem length, disease and pest issues, but even more importantly, how long they will bloom into the summer heat
wow.
because they're so much better established.
Wow.
Once you do it, you just won't even understand how you haven't been doing it this way.
Mm. And it gives you something to do in fall when it's nice and not too hot, the pest and disease
yep.
pressure's down, the humidity's down, all the reasons that you want to be out there anyway.
And you know, where, because you're in it, you're in Georgia, right?
Right.
You know, those of us that are like in the mid United States and South really can plant these year round. If your ground's not frozen, you can plant them. Mm-hmm. The key for fall for those people, as well as those for very early spring, is you need to be preparing your planting spot in the fall. Mm-hmm. Once fall comes, it gets wet. It never dries out. You know, sometimes you have snow load. So fall is a great time. I mean, who doesn't want to wear a sweatshirt in the morning and peel it by 10 o'clock?
Yeah.
You know?
Right. Now, Lisa, on these winter hardy annuals for your zone, and you're planting them in the fall, are you using covers? Are you using frost cloth? Are you using... anything to warm the soil?
I'll tell you what our process is. So here, because I direct seed and plant transplants, we have two different types of beds we prepare. The beds that are prepared for direct seeding, they're open beds. There's no mulch on them. There's nothing. We prepare the bed immediately before we sow the seeds so that my flower seeds and the weed seeds that are in the bed have an even playing field to germinate. You know, you don't want to prepare your bed for direct seeding this week and then next week sow the seeds, because the weed seeds have a week ahead. And that doesn't seem important today, but it will in 3 weeks, right?
Yeah.
So direct seeded beds are just prepared. Now, we use a lot on our farm of, it's a biodegradable mulch film called Bio360.
Oh.
I've used it for 10 years, and I will tell you that I wouldn't be farming at the scale that I'm at now if I hadn't been using it. It gives you all the benefits of plastic, meaning weed suppression, but for fall planted stuff, the black side up helps to heat the soil just a smidgen, not a whole lot, but that helps. And then when you incorporate using hoops and lightweight row cover, I mean, just imagine what it must be like under that cover in December, you know, when it's 20 degrees outside, but you're blocking the winds. You know, I always imagine, I have quite an imagination. I mean, I'm always thinking those bugs are underneath there in lawn chairs with their sunglasses on, just laying in the sun. Cause I mean, it's like a dreamy place to grow.
Uh-huh.
And so if a plant is winter hardy in your zone, that is not required. It is an added benefit.
Okay.
For a lot of reasons. But if you are trying to grow something beyond your zone that's maybe not hardy, which I don't recommend people do that until they figure this game out, then row covers would be required. But Joe, I know that you use a lot of row covers, and I find, and I was surprised, how helpful a lightweight row cover is. Even though it only gives 4 degrees of protection, it's the blocking the wind.
Mm-hmm.
And concentrating the sun during the day. And then you add on top of that black biodegradable film. I attribute my great success in cool season hardy annuals is to having put all these pieces together, because I felt so challenged because I couldn't have greenhouses and hoop houses like all my flower farming friends. So I went to heroic steps, and guess what? It is simple, it is easy, and it makes a big difference.
I'm sure it does. So help me visualize this. The film is down on the soil?
Yes. Just like plastic.
Yep.
Like you see people put plastic down, and it's made out of a corn byproduct. Mm. It's made in Italy, and we buy it out of Canada. And it's black on one side and light gray on the other side. And basically you choose which side to put up when you're making your bed based on what the afternoon temperatures are.
Wow.
Because if it's going above 80 degrees, like now in the summer, if you put the black side up, your transplants would be dead in 2 hours.
Yeah.
The gray side up really brings the surface temperature down about 20 degrees. But I will tell you that for particularly fall planting, mulching in this garden can be a little bit of a challenge because of it's cold outside. If you mulch too much and it's a rainy winter and you have a lot of snow, those plants can get some rot problems because of the way we mulch, right? We're
Yeah.
trying to suppress weeds. And I've just found that the film has really assisted in preventing that problem, but making it very beneficial. So yeah, it works really, really well. So it's a mulch film,
and
is basically.
You just cut where you're going to put your transplant cut into?
You don't even have to cut, Joe. It is nothing like landscape fabric or plastic. You could use your finger, but we use a high-tech tool here. It's called a screwdriver. And so Bobo does most of the planting here now, and she lays out, we use the flower support netting as a planting grid because it's in 6-inch blocks, and we just roll that out on the top of the bed, and then we space out our plants, and then we roll it up, and she punches all of her holes before she plants, and it's really a very efficient, very effective for weed suppression, and particularly, you know, winter wheat, you know how it is. You do a lot of cool season garden. There are weeds that grow in the winter, like chickweed and henbit. Oh, I know, but this prevents 99% of that from happening.
I like the template technique that you've got there, rolling out that that flower support. That's
yes.
Nice. Yeah.
Yeah, that's really useful.
And then you're just supporting the row cover with hoops, small hoops?
Yes. So when I first started out, my husband owns a plumbing company. So I thought, okay, I'll use flexible PVC. They call it PEX pipe because, you know, he had lots of it laying around. And I used that for a little while. And then I graduated to using No. 9 wire. It's a little bit, the diameter is much less. It's easier to push into the ground and it held a little tighter. But now we use the pre-arched wire hoops.
Yeah.
Totally, really, really easy. And we use the Ag 19, which is the lightest weight row cover. It allows 85% of air and water and light to get through it. So you don't have to, you know, it's not an up and down kind of thing. And it's particularly for if you're leaving it on all winter. I live in a really windy site. Mm-hmm. So it is hugely beneficial to our transplants to be protected from that brutal wind. And that lightweight just makes it really useful. And if I, you know, if we get, you're probably like me, we don't get single digits here on a very, I mean, it can happen. And when it does happen, I just double the row covers if I have a concern for something. So I find them really, really useful.
Nice. Okay. That helps a lot. That gives us a picture of how you do what you do. Oh, by the way, you have, in your book or on your website or both, you have a really good resource for people that can, look for the flower options for winter hardiness based on where they live from the information you have on your site.
Sure. So in the back of the book, Cool Flowers, on page 138, there's a cheat list. It lists all the flowers and the winter hardiness zones that we were aware of. And also on our website, there's just a lot of resources.
Yeah, there are.
And yes.
TheGardenersWorkshop.com, and we'll certainly link to that in the show notes, but it's loaded with information, so you've done a great job there.
Thank you.
Yeah. Okay, Lisa, so that's fall planting, but the alternative, of course, is to wait until, you know, you're past the new year and you're coming upon spring.
Right.
When is it appropriate that we're doing that versus fall planting?
Sure. And so, because I don't want to forget to say this, so a common question that I get is, so when is fall planting? And when is very early spring? And so this is why your first and last frost dates are so important. Mm. The window of opportunity, and I'm going to tell you that I have pushed it both ways before, so don't feel like this is not in concrete, but as a general rule, 6 to 8 weeks before your first winter frost is your target date to plant transplants in the ground and or seeds in the ground. And this really throws people off and they're like, oh my goodness, you mean I plant them both at the same time? Yes, because a seed needs the same 6 to 8 weeks as the transplant needs. That gives them 6 to 8 weeks for the transplant to either become established before winter starts, or it gives the seed time to sprout and germinate and be born into a little baby plant before it goes into winter. So they both need the same end result. And so it's very confusing to people. So that target for you is 6 to 8 weeks. And I will add that with climate change, I am finding that I am planting later and later every year because the problem with planting fall planted stuff too early is it grows too big before winter comes and it won't be as winter hardy. It's just too mature. Uh-huh. You know, you want a 6-inch plant that's well established to hit winter hard. I mean, it can take it. But a 14-inch or a 20-inch plant because fall just went on and on and on, or you planted too early, a very common mistake that people make, is it's a problem. So 6 to 8 weeks before your first fall frost is your target date to plant your direct seeds or your transplants. So you obviously have to start your transplants before that time. Whatever time you need with soil blocks, I find it's much quicker. So I only have to start about 4 weeks before planting time. But that would, you know, you key that to you. And I will also say that you're looking for another factor that I look to is nighttime temperatures. Disregard daytime temperatures. It's the nights that are really important to me. I'm looking for 60 to 65 degrees at night and holding for 2 weeks. That's when we're making that transition. You know, that's another good indicator, you know, because people, it really befuddles people, but you just have to kind of wing it. The weather is unpredictable, and that's why farmers are a little crazy. You know, this is what makes us crazy. It's the weather, you know, so you just have to do the best you can. That's the bottom line.
Are you using, I'm sorry, are you using a soil thermometer locally or are you using an online source?
No, I don't use any soil thermometers. And this is a really common question I get too. We go, I mean, I'm very simple, Joe. I just find that the more complicated we make it, the more confusion it is with people. I 100% base, I don't even own a soil thermometer and never have. And I just go based on nighttime temperatures for all of our plantings, warm and cool season, because that's just really the best indicator. And so that's the fall.
Lisa, before you go, just jump ahead. I had one more question.
Sure.
We talked about if you're sowing transplants or planting transplants, about 4 weeks prior to planting is when you start your seeds, but the seeds go in basically the same time as the transplants go into the ground. So they're at 0 days versus the seedlings are at 4 weeks at the same going in.
Or however long it takes you to grow a seedling, because as we know, some people it takes much longer. It totally depends on the conditions that you give them. So, yeah.
But the reason why you can do that is that a seed getting established in place establishes quicker because it's not being transplanted, and it basically down the road, 4 weeks down the road from then, they've kind of caught up to each other. The seeds have caught up to each other.
Well, so when we plant the seed, the main reason that I find that we fall plant direct sowing is those particular seeds really benefit from a temperature change, meaning cool nights and warm days. That's what taps them to break dormancy and sprout. So that's why it's hard. You know, I plant them out in the garden directly because it's just easier to germinate them that way. It's very difficult to give those kind of conditions indoors. Yeah. Larkspur is a great example of that. Larkspur is looking for 55 to 60 degrees at night and 70 or 75 degree days, a perfect Indian summer. Me too, exactly. Yes, in Larkspur. So that would be very difficult to do in your home. You know, I mean, our house don't go down that cold at night, right?
Yeah.
So the point of planting seeds out in the garden, potentially at the same time you're planting transplants, is that, yes, they both need the same end result of becoming established by the time winter comes. And it's just the method of what that seed wants for the easiest germination. I am all about simple, easy, cost effective. And that's how what's brought us to that list.
Yeah. I'd cut you off, but you were, I think, headed over now into spring or late winter.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right. So we call it very early spring. And I will tell you that most people are thinking about planting this group of flowers when they're actually should be almost blooming. And that's the confusing part for us. So very early spring, I emphasize that word very just to let people know this is different than what we have been doing. This is not, you know, once spring is cracked when Easter is right around the corner. Very early spring is 6 to 8 weeks before your last spring frost.
Okay.
For me, I'm mid-April is my last spring frost typically. So that means Valentine's Day, mid-February. I mean, it is not uncommon for us to have snow on the ground in that time of the year. So that's why it is so paramount that you prepare your planting beds last fall. We literally, and I do not direct seed anything in the spring. It's too cold, very early spring. It's too cold. Yeah. Seeds are not going to germinate outside in the garden when it's, you know, 25 degrees at night, right? So we don't do any direct seeding in very early spring. So all the transplant beds were prepared last fall, and they have sat out in the field with Bio360, the mulch, either your mulch that you're going to use or whatever your method of preventing weeds from growing. They've just been sitting out there all winter, empty. Mm-hmm. And sometimes we literally have to push broom the snow off the beds. Wow. To plant. And that's when these guys want to get in the ground. Another one of the flowers that, you know, we haven't even talked about what flowers we're talking about. One particular flower that is an amazing spring, fragrant, gorgeous flower that people want to grow that they can't grow because it really detests the heat is stock. If people don't know what stock is, you need to like search engine that. It looks kind of like a snapdragon, but it's a lot more luscious and it has this amazing spicy smell. We plant that in mid-February and have it for Mother's Day. I mean, it is just a gorgeous flower.
Wow.
So people try planting it, you know, in April and May, and before it can even get started, the heat comes and it just closes up the door and goes to pouting, and you'll never see a flower on it, you know? So 6 to 8 weeks before your last frost. And if people count back from that, so that means that all those transplants that I'm planting in mid-February,
yeah,
are started in January.
Right.
When we want to be starting seeds. Now we actually have something that, you know, and we're not going to talk vegetables, but there's tons of vegetables that can follow this same pattern.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you are gardening. It adds a whole new season.
Yes.
And it's gardening in conditions that are just so much more fun to garden in.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. Okay. This is great information. And those dates are critically important. And I love the term very early spring in the fact that we can all kind of put some parameters around that based on what you said, 6 to 8 weeks before your last frost for spring. Now, Lisa, you can help us avoid some of the most common mistakes. You talked about preparing your beds, first of all.
Yes.
Start there because that's a big one.
Sure. So I do practice some no-till and I have conventional parts on my garden. And so basically the process would be if in the no-till area, we would top with a couple of inches of compost. And we basically also always use a dry organic fertilizer, which is just a low dose of food. I mean, we're,
yeah,
trying to squeeze the life out of this, you know, this earth, right?
Yeah.
More so because we typically get 2 to 3 crops out of almost all of our beds. So you have to feed the soil. So we use dry organic fertilizer. We always put usually a couple of inches of compost. And we, you know, I tell people, and in particularly your crowd, just like my crowd, people need to understand you have to buy compost. We, mm-hmm, cannot make enough,
mm-hmm,
unless you have a very small garden. And it's a really laborious process to make compost, mm-hmm, on a volume.
Yeah.
And so people need to feel like, you know, there's certainly places that, you know, you want to research where you're buying it from, but you have to have enough. We aim for 2 inches. On our no-till beds, we just lay it on top. We put the fertilizer down on the bed. We lay that on top and we'd be ready to plant, right? We can also sometimes add mulch on top of that when sometimes we have shredded bark. I take whatever is chemical free and free.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we don't pay for mulch. So just depends on what that is. In our conventional beds, we do basically the same thing. We add dry organic fertilizer, the beds are tilled. And then we would either, I have a bed maker. So that's an implement on a tractor that, mm-hmm, forms the bed.
Wow.
Lays the irrigation and lays the film all in one swoop, and it, sure, is a sight to behold.
Oh my God.
It brings tears to farmers' eyes that don't have one. Anyway, so when we're done, we have raised beds, which is definitely a must for this group of flowers, which I'll touch on in just a second. So when we make our beds, the food is in them. They are mulched and ready to prevent weeds from sprouting, from getting that needed light that it needs to germinate, because henbit and chickweed are my two you know, like, oh my gosh. And then there's always someone who says, you know, you can eat them. Well, it's like there, I mean, I'd have to feed like 500 people for that. And then we're ready to plant. And so the raised beds is essential for this group of flowers, because think about your garden in the fall, winter, and very early spring. Most of us, first off, aren't even out there, as you as I know. So many folks don't even participate. So you're not really observing the conditions in your garden. Areas that in the summer aren't so obvious that they have a little drainage problem because of the heat. Heat really dries up a lot of water, right? So it helps us not notice problems. Because fall, winter, and very early spring, we get more rain, more snow, more ice, and it doesn't dry out. And this group of flowers are particularly sensitive to wet feet. Mm-hmm. You really, the better your drainage, you give this group good drainage, that's what kills most of cool flowers or cool season hardy annuals. I tell people, you know, reach out and want to know what happened. I'm sure the winter killed them. And they tell me their zone and what they planted. I said, they shouldn't have. And as it turns out, it's almost always wet feet, right? Because that just induces so many diseases and it just sets the plants up not to be healthy.
Yeah.
So raise those beds as much as you can, and that'll just make the experience better and better.
When you talk about raised bed, are you talking about mounded raised bed or are you physical structure raised bed?
I have both. Mm-hmm. So, you know, because I do demonstrations here for home gardeners as well as flower farmers, I now have beds just like yours.
Oh, I saw. Yes.
So we now do have two really raised beds. They're 18 inches tall. But in general, for farming and for just a large home garden, it would be mounded. I mean, we literally use a shovel. If we're not doing the tractor in the no-till area, literally you're shoveling from the pathways up onto the beds just to make your beds. And it's just a great workout.
Very good. Okay, so great drainage is key, and we've talked about that sufficiently, and I think our listeners get that for sure. And then we're talking about full sun for these flowers, yeah?
Yeah, but you know, the one thing that I will say is people that are living on the edge, you have to understand, before I married Steve with this great garden in place, right, I lived in deep shade. I mean, that's one of the reasons I asked him out on our first date is all the sunshine at his house, you know? I mean, for real, but in the winter, obviously, if you have deciduous trees, the leaves are off.
Yeah.
So you might be able to squeak in. I mean, if you're fighting a shade situation, if you timed it right, you might be able to get a little bit more sunshine on your gardening spot, especially for those early spring bloomers. You know, for us, poppies and bachelor buttons here in the field are blooming the end of March, early April. So no trees. Typically, the trees don't have leaves in, so you can squeak that out. But yes, full sun is always the best.
Got it. So, Lisa, when we started this conversation before we hit the record button, you know, I was telling you how over the past couple of years, I've really been hit by the flower bug more so than ever. You know, I started out my gardening life when I was 8 years old, planting flowers like crazy. But then somehow my path took me towards food growing mostly. But boy, I'll tell you, in the last couple of years, and this is partly a big tribute to my farm manager, Toby, who's a big flower grower, and she's brought some of her skill and talent over to my garden. And man, what a difference, not only aesthetically, you know, because it really lights up the garden when in the summer, you well know that there's not much color out there other than green and maybe a little yellow. But to see the flowers is amazing. But more than that, more importantly than that, is the amount of beneficial insect and pollinator activity that happens because of it. Talk about that.
You know, when I first started out farming and gardening, organic wasn't even talked about 25 years ago much, right? I mean, it's like you were a hippie if you even said the word organic, right? Yeah. So when I first started out, my intention was not to be an organic gardener. But I will tell you that because of my start with this group of flowers, this cool season hardy annuals that typically are some of the earliest spring bloomers. My garden kind of got kickstarted so much earlier than everybody else's. What kind of evolved over the years, and I won't go through the whole story of, you know, fighting pests and trying to, you know, do it organically and you follow an IPM and all these things. And but what happens when you become a flower farmer is you're doing like 20 different jobs all the time.
Yeah.
And you just don't have time to do all of the things that you want to do. I finally just threw up my hands and said, all right, y'all duke it out, pests versus, you know, whatever's going on out here, and I'll come back and get whatever. And what I watched happen over a 2 or 3 year period is that I didn't even realize it when it was actually taking place, is that I had been also eliminating the good bugs along with the bad bugs. Even though I was using IPM targeted stuff, it's still, there are victims of those things. And what actually happened is, I mean, nature kind of restored itself here on my farm. And it is a sight to behold. And so we attribute the vast population and communities here on my farm, because we think about very early spring and what's blooming in your yard or in your garden. I mean, one of the biggest bloomers that our beneficial insects, you know, depend on are dandelions. Well, what have we been doing to those for all these years?
Yeah.
Trying to eliminate them. And so we feel like we get like a 6 or 8 week jump on bringing, you know, we roll out the red carpet to the beneficial insects, which is not just pollinators or beneficial creatures, I should say. It's not just pollinators and beneficial insects like assassin bugs and all these predatory bugs that come in, but it's also birds. Birds are huge consumers of insects, particularly caterpillars.
Yeah.
I mean, when you start looking at how many bugs a bird needs to feed her babies in a week, it's like you'd really get them in. And flowers are what really bring it in. So bringing flowers into your garden, blooming on a week after week after week, 6 to 8 weeks before most of us really have any volume, it changes your gardening world. And we have quite a community of native bees here on our farm. We have longhorn bees.
Yeah.
And they are, I mean, if you've never seen them, they are just the cutest little things ever. And the bug, the local entomologist back then that came here and identified them for me said, oh my gosh, nobody, I haven't seen these, you know? And he said, it's your, because we grow so many, one of the many cool season hardy annuals is the family of Rudbeckias. Oh. We grow about 15 different varieties of Rudbeckias, and that's a huge native bee draw.
Wow.
And when you fall plant them, guess what? They're blooming by Mother's Day. You know?
Wow.
So yeah, I could go down the bug thing and never come back, but it just invites a lot of nature into your garden that really, I don't know how people can truly garden organically without having a strong presence of flowers, because it's just the easy way to do it, y'all. It's the way the world was made to work.
It is. I second that for sure. Well said. Let's talk about some of the flowers. We've talked about what we need to know to get ready. Now we need to know what we need to plant.
Sure. So, you know, some of the most beloved, but those that are, that we all have struggled with perhaps. And it's the basic bottom line for this whole group of flowers is about timing of when you plant them, you know, and it's because of their awkward planting time that most of us are planting them when they actually should be on the verge of blooming in our gardens. So you're weeks and weeks and weeks behind, right? And so those that are most beloved that everybody wants to grow, sweet peas, Bells of Ireland, Snapdragon, Sweet William, Buplurum, which a lot of people don't even know what that is. But once you meet it, it is an amazing flower to have in your garden. And it is so important to beneficial insects. And so the sweet peas, for years when I was a vendor at farmers markets for 14 years, we heard the same phrase. We actually would have a little peanut gallery of, it would start out with my staff, but then it would turn into customers too. We'd have sweet peas. My sister will go to any length to encourage customers to come into our booth, right? So she would stand with a big handful of sweet peas and say, hey, take a smell. And people would smell the sweet pea fragrance. They all say the same thing. My grandma used to grow these.
Wow.
And we would, and you'd step back and she'd do it to the next person and say it over and over again. And then people would say things like, oh my gosh, I try to grow them every single year, but they just don't do anything. Well, guess what, friends? They are winter hardy to zone 7.
Wow.
So that means if you live in zone 7, 8, or 9, you need to fall plant them. We grow sweet peas like they're blooming weeds up here. I mean, you're ripping them out in July because you're tired of cutting them.
Mm.
And that's another really important component of planting at the proper time is all of these cool season annuals go into the heat and humidity of our summers with a whole new armor on now, mm-hmm. because they're so well established.
Wow.
So sweet peas are one that, it's all about time. And Belles of Ireland are very the same way. So in the book, Cool Flowers, there's 30 flowers featured. And the book was published in 2014. And I will tell you that we've almost doubled that list.
Wow.
Now. And people can see what we've added by just if you go to the website, thegardenersworkshop.com, and then go to our store and go to the seed category, there is a cool season seed category.
Mm-hmm.
And there are additional varieties of flowers there because we now grow those. And you can see those that have been added. And because I will tell you that I had a really hard time when I was researching that book finding out this information. It was like, all the books were old, pre-1950. You know, that's back when grandmas knew to do this.
Yeah.
Larkspur is another one. Bachelor buttons. And bachelor buttons come in so many different colors than what people think. It's beyond blue.
Mm.
They're the earliest bloom on this farm out in the field. And what people don't understand is even the foliage excretes nectar.
Wow.
And so that's why when you go out there and you go to cut some, it's like, why are there bees and wasps, good bugs, y'all, on the foliage? And that's why they're finding their way. And so that's like, we are providing something by growing this group of flowers that the wildlife, the creatures have really been missing out on.
Jet, real quick, the sweet pea, are you transplanting or direct sowing that in the fall?
Transplant it. Mm-hmm. So we, transplant in the fall. I start them in the 2-inch block. And sweet peas really like it much cooler than what we think. And in fact, we now do not put them on a seedling heat mat at all. We set them outside. When the nights start going down to 55 degrees, they just pop. You know, the difference between, I guess, the illusion, I get this question often, is why don't we direct seed more? It is just more work. It's more labor. And as a business farmer, you know, we always are looking, what is the quickest, most efficient, best stand of plants to get? And we find, you're talking to commercial farmers, you'll find that we transplant as much as we possibly can,
mm-hmm.
because it is far easier to walk out to a garden that's prepared and set up to not grow weeds,
mm-hmm.
you know, mulched,
mm-hmm.
and plump, put a transplant in the ground, than to plant a seed that has to be kept watered almost daily,
yeah.
to get it to germinate properly.
Yeah. Yeah.
You have to weed around it because the weed seeds are, because you can't really use mulch when you direct seed,
right.
Typically.
Right.
So it's just much, much easier. So sweet peas, we start indoors in a 2-inch blocker. They're only a couple of weeks old when we actually plant them out in the garden. They're about mm-hmm. a 6-inch tall vine. And that little vine goes through winter like a champ. And, you know, I mentioned earlier about the scariest thing that a flower farmer does is to peek under the row covers in January,
yeah.
you know, when it's 20 degrees outside. And it has happened to me more than once. You look under the covers and think, oh my gosh, they're dead. They're frozen. They're goners. I need to start them again. But what we have to remember is typically that little stem that we're looking at is not what really is going to be producing next spring. That stem is just there anchoring this amazing root system that mm. is just getting so well established. And then when around here, usually it's about March, when we get some warm days, all of a sudden you have 15 sprouts coming up around that stem of yeah. all the vines.
Wow.
It's amazing. I'm telling you, Joe, once you do it, you will just not believe it.
I can't wait. I'm making my list right now. You have me wondering again a little bit more about your seed starting, because you talked about it's less work to start those seeds inside and then just plant them into a prepared bed. And
yes.
So I can imagine people are listening right now, well, she's soil blocking, so there's work to that. What about lights and all of that? So describe a little bit about that and how
sure.
little work there is relative to
sure.
that.
Sure. So I am not a purist. I don't do everything in soil blocks. I also use plug trays. I do whatever, again, is best for the seed and for the volume that we're doing. So as commercial growers, we know that when you direct sow outdoors, to have a good stand, what I mean by that is to have as many plants as you can fit into a bed. You don't want holes in your bed, because we know it just grows weeds, and that's lost revenue as a commercial farmer. And so when you direct sow, they just needs a lot more intervention outside. Mm-hmm. And I know this because we do some direct sowing in the fall. And I've gotten my system down that, you know, we basically are pretty weed free in the spring. Because of my steps of direct sowing in the fall, which is just sowing our seeds in a very deliberate manner. We oversow and we make our rows far enough apart. I use a stand-up garden hoe. It's a trapezoid hoe. And I hoe every week until frost comes. Mm-hmm. And that totally extinguishes all the weed seeds on the surface. Well, I don't mind doing that job, but that is very laborious compared to what we do when we start seeds inside. Mm. So we only do that for those seeds that I find are the easiest to germinate outside in the garden. And typically that is about that temperature variance that they really need to break dormancy. So when you start seeds indoors, once you're set up, I do not have any greenhouse. I never have had a greenhouse. The first 3 years of commercial farming, I didn't even have a work building, which I have a grow room in this work building now, which is a 10 by 10 room that is stocked with, you know, stainless steel rolling racks that have grow lights and shelves on there. And it is so simple, easy, and successful. Mm-hmm. If you are an avid gardener or flower farmer, just bite the bullet and get your equipment, and it's there for life.
Yeah,
you just, I mean, I literally use the same soil blocker I bought in 1998.
Huh.
You know, so we start seeds indoors and we pop them onto a seedling heat mat. And the other really great thing about cool flowers, if you have a greenhouse, this isn't really an option for you. Cool season hardy annuals don't want hot, you know, they want cooler conditions to germinate. So because my seed starting is all in a building that is conditioned, we just bump the AC up and let the air temperature get up to 65 or down to 65 to 68 degrees, which makes our heat mats work properly. And warm soil, cool air is what cool season hardy annuals are looking for to sprout properly. They sprout quick. We pop them over under grow lights. They're under the grow lights usually. And again, it can vary from plant to plant and growing conditions. But they're under grow lights a couple of weeks. Then I pop them out under a carport. They spend a week out there getting ready before they're planted out in the garden. And as mm-hmm. you know, with soil blocks, you can handle them so much earlier than you can a transplant in a plug. And those plants, when you put them out into a condition that they don't have to compete with weeds and they've got the water that they need, I mean, really, within just a week, you have this amazingly well-established plant versus all that hoeing and direct sowing and keeping the birds from taking the seeds. And it's just easier.
Yeah.
Less work.
Right.
Less labor.
When you take them into that transitional place of the carport, there's no direct light there. Is there any supplemental light?
There is. So the carport faces southeast.
Mm-hmm.
So in the morning, it gets sun.
Nice.
And then as the sun rises, it's covered.
Mm-hmm.
And then on the west side, it gets that hot afternoon
wow.
sun. And we, in fact, I put a cedar 4-foot fence around my carport because we have such wind here.
Oh.
To block the wind. So it's kind of a perfect little place.
Yeah.
It's worth finding your sweet spot to do that because, I mean, we start, when we were in high production, which I am not now, we start 100,000 seedlings a year in this system with no greenhouse.
Wow.
You know, that is 11 months out of the year moving them through. It's very, very doable, you know, very, very doable.
By the way, the flowers that you direct sow in the fall versus starting indoors, it's a short list, right?
It is a really short list. And I will tell you that if you look at anything that I've written, books and on our website, many seeds can go either way, meaning you could start them indoors or you could direct sow them. I tend to always say the method that I follow first. So when you're reading a description, if it says, you know, starting indoors or plant outside, that means that I started indoors.
Got it.
So the short list for me, and I'm going to give the common name so most people may know them, corn cockle, dill, bupleurum, bachelor buttons, larkspur, bells of Ireland, love in a mist, and poppies.
That is a short list out of 30.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. And there are more direct seeder new ones on our website now. Mm-hmm. I mean, new heart since the book. Mm-hmm. And, you know, poppies, Iceland poppies are what most people, everybody wants them. Nobody can grow them. And you just have to, first off, you have to sow so many more seeds than you think you should. And it's all about temperatures. We fall sow them. Mm-hmm. And they are, in fact, I'll double check. It says zone 6 in here, but I would suspect that they're almost winter hardy to zone 5. Mm. So you need to fall plant them. And when they go through winter, I mean, Iceland poppies, that tells you a little bit about them, right?
Yeah.
And so that's one of those, and blue bachelor buttons, the end of March, early April. I mean, it is dreamland when that's going on.
Wow. All right. You've got me motivated as if I needed anything more. I'm ready. So this was great. Anything I failed to ask you that would be important here? I mean, there's a lot more that we could talk about for sure.
Sure, sure. I guess the things that the highlights that I would say to people is, first off, you need to learn what your historic first and last frost dates are, what your winter hardiness zone is. And then if something's winter hardy in your zone, based on our information that you can find on our website, plant it in the fall. It'll grow taller. It'll have more stems. It'll be more disease and pest resistant. And it will go further into the summer, more so than you've ever experienced before. And then when you plant, excellent drainage is key. Row cover is not required if it's winter hardy in your zone. But there are benefits. I mean, do you benefit from wearing a coat when there's a windstorm outside? Yes. Yeah. So it's helpful to your plants, but it's not required. Mm. And weeds do grow in the winter. So you need to take steps to prevent weeds through the winter, whatever your method is. And remember, the beds that you're going to be planting in very early spring need to be prepared in the fall. We have people in zones 3 and 4, Alberta, Canada. There's flower farmers all over Northern Canada that are just pushing this group of flowers to the limit for us. And, you know, they get snow load. I mean, it's like there's something for everybody. We all plant this group of flowers. It's just that we all may plant them on different timing based on our conditions.
Such an information-packed episode, wasn't it? And on a topic we don't hear discussed very much. So I am very thankful Lisa suggested this topic for today. And as I've learned, I will definitely be sowing my cool flower seeds here starting very soon, because according to Lisa's free download, I need to be starting my seeds right now to give them 4 weeks of inside growth to transplant outside so they're in the ground 6 weeks before my first frost date. So again, this free download is great to help you know what to plant and when. And you can get your copy now at joegardner.com/coolflowers. And again, cool flowers is one word. In addition to our weekly podcast, you can find me during the week on Instagram at Joe Gardner and on Facebook at the Joe Gardner page and the Joe Gardner Facebook group. Our YouTube channels, we have two, Joe Gardner TV and GGW TV, to see past episodes of my television show, Growing a Greener World. In my new book, it's almost out, The Vegetable Gardening Book, your complete guide to growing an edible organic garden from seed to harvest. And you can order it online right now to be among the very first to get your copy. And speaking of organic vegetable gardening, you can add your name to the wait list for our new signature program launching next spring in the Online Gardening Academy. It's everything you want and need to know about being an organic vegetable gardener, from sowing the seeds all the way to harvest, along with how to grow all the top warm and cool season crops. We've been working on it now for over a year, and we will continue to do so to address the many cool season crops that I'll be growing in my fall garden over the next few months, from seeds that are already up and growing in my seed starting room right now. So again, you can learn more and add your name to the wait list so we can notify you when registration is open. And finally, thanks to all of you who have joined me today. My mission is to do whatever I can to help you take the guesswork out of gardening by teaching you the why do behind the how to, so that you can and will become a better, smarter, more confident gardener.
Okay, welcome back. If you'd like to listen to the full original episode over on the Joe Gardner podcast, I'll put a link to that in the show notes. And also to the free resource that Lisa put together specifically for this interview called The Cool Flowers Planting Guide. You'll also find links to all of Joe's resources, including his new book and his online course that launches next spring. If you like what you're hearing here on the Field and Garden podcast, we'd love it if you'd tell a friend about us and leave a review for us wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you so much for joining me. I'm Jessie from the Gardener's Workshop, and I hope you have a great day.